Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and with me again from Las Vegas, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I have been pushing the Spurs banana boat with LeBron so hard, and I think I've already stared the death of my theory straight in the eyes. Last night was one of the most surreal experiences I've seen at Summer League, or really in my life. You want to walk us through it? I mean, there was so much going on.
Honestly, I had hit my breaking point with Summer League like midday yesterday, because we got there at like 1, and by like 3 or 4 o'clock, I had to go get some Dippin' Dots to sort of recharge, and I was just like, what am I still doing here?
Yeah.
And then we had the Lonzo experience. LeBron showed up. Ben Simmons was in the mix. And then this morning, we took a field trip to the Hoover Dam. It's been a great 24 hours.
So it's been unbelievable, but we're going to get to the Hoover Dam talk, but let's save that, because that's not going to change the power balance of the NBA. I mean, we really saw unfolding before our eyes, I believe, a major recruitment effort by LeBron James, major Nike executives. I think Ben Simmons is in on it. Lonzo shows up wearing Nikes rather than the Zoe 2 signature sneakers. One of the first athletes ever to have a signature sneaker and then not wear it. LeVar is nowhere to be found. I think they just kind of locked LeVar away somewhere, keeping him away. And I think LeBron and Nike, it's sort of like the Illuminati. They're trying to adopt Lonzo away from the big baller brand family. They want to bring him into the fold. Isn't that the feeling you got from that game?
Well, first of all, let me just say that everybody should watch Summer League with Ben Golliver, because you find a way to get people into it. I was sitting next to you, and about 5 minutes into the game, LeBron had showed up, and you had been like hyping the whole thing. You turned into like Captain Conspiracy Theory last night, and I was into it. And so I got a text being like, come meet me for dinner. And it was like a work dinner with other NBA people. And I was like, nah, I got to stay and hang out for this Sixers-Lakers game.
And stare at LeBron James as he tries to potentially put together the super team Lakers, scuttling my Spurs theory.
I know. Yeah, it was a tough night for your San Antonio banana boat theory. But no bullshit, it was actually fascinating to watch LeBron watch Lonzo. And we'll see what happened. Who knows? I feel like we don't have the full story right now. We're recording this like midday Thursday. Maybe it'll leak out before it publishes Friday. But like, someone said something to Lonzo, whether it was Magic, whether it was like LeBron's people reaching out. It's not a coincidence that the one game that he wears Nikes is the one with LeBron and Lynn Merritt there.
And LeVar not there.
LeVar's not there. After the game, you were talking to him and he said, it's good when you can do whatever you want or wear whatever you want.
It felt like a sneaker negotiation playing out before our eyes.
Yeah, and I don't want to go all full InfoWars here, but like there's a lot of dots to connect here. And also, the best part about the game last night is that while we got to watch LeBron track Lonzo on every possession, and he was watching pretty closely, you also had Lakers fans who had made the pilgrimage from L.A. shouting at LeBron for 2 hours straight about coming there next year.
Come to
year.
L.A., be the savior. Yeah. Lakers, Lakers. Yeah, there's no question. And, I mean, we really buried this. Lonzo also killed. I mean, he was unreal. 36 points, I think 11 assists. He was active on defense, 5 steals, hitting the glass. Got a couple block shots, showed his length a little bit. Okay, everyone's going to say, don't overreact to Summer League. That's why we go to Summer League, to overreact, okay? And I am completely head over heels with the Lonzo phenomenon.
You are. I would not have wanted to start a podcast with Lonzo Ball Takes twice in a row, but here we are.
Get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like people have gotten enough Lonzo coverage over the past few months. But look, last night was crazy, and it's been a roller coaster this week, because earlier in the week, we started out, I think it was a Monday's podcast, we started out talking about Lonzo, and I was trying to be nice and was into his game. We finished recording that. 30 minutes later, it comes out that he's ducking De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
I was irate. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? We were just so nice and so complimentary about your game. And then he pulls that move, and I was like, come on.
I know, we already don't get the Fultz showdown, and like, because he's out. And then now we don't get the Fox showdown. It's come on.
So that was tough. That was tough. But then to bounce back last night.
That was more than a salvage.
No, he looked great. Yeah. He And granted, it was the Summer Sixers. I know, I don't want to be the like Summer League doesn't matter guy.
Yeah.
But from a basketball standpoint, the biggest question with Lonzo, besides the jumper, is whether he's going to be able to get to the rim. And it was not too difficult to get to the rim against that Sixers roster.
But you're the guy who's telling us we should root for Lonzo. And then Lonzo goes through traffic, gets the and-one layup, pounds his chest, gets the call, hits the free throw, Lakers crowd going nuts. You had the
I feel validated because everyone can now see that if Lonzo's like a 30-10 guy, everyone wins. It was so much fun last night.
Well, I think the funniest part to me, earlier I had mentioned that, you know, this LeBron Lakers conspiracy, if this is really the track he's going down, Lonzo is in the Kyrie role, right? Of like the young upcoming prospect that LeBron believes he can mold. And what line do we get from Lonzo in the postgame interview when he's asked about his sneakers? Mamba mentality. Who is he basically quoting Kyrie Irving like he's already got the script?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. For people who don't know, because honestly, Lonzo played well, whatever. It's one game. LeBron's presence is what sort of took it to the next level.
Of course.
Because for people who don't know, Lynn Merritt, he is, what is he, CEO of Nike?
He is a big shot
at
Nike.
Shadow president. I mean, yeah, he's a big deal. And so they were both sitting there, and then LeBron afterward posts the Just Do It Nike Instagram, which I'm sure a lot of people are listening, like, who cares about any of this?
Yeah.
But I'm convinced that Nike, like, is pulling a lot of strings across the league, and something is happening here. Like, this, none of this is an accident, right?
I mean, now is the time with Nike taking over the merchandising and apparel agreement for them to really flex their muscle, right? So you're the InfoWars guy. You believe they dropped.
First of all, last night you were the InfoWars guy. You were in my ear all game long with various theories about what was going on.
Look, so but like it's your first theory was they dropped KD in Golden State to kind of cancel out or neuter the Steph Curry effect, right?
Yes.
But now that actually created this unstoppable team, which makes LeBron look bad. If you're Nike, you need LeBron in championship winning position.
Yeah.
And you want him in a big market.
With Paul George, who has low-key very nice Nike shoes.
Yeah.
His like signature shoe is pretty solid.
So if you get a situation where, okay, this might be getting ahead of ourselves, but let's say Jordan athlete Russell Westbrook, Nike athlete Paul George, Nike frontman LeBron James, and future Nike athlete Lonzo Ball, all on the Lakers, and now you get like a Lakers-Warriors Western Conference Finals. Do you think that Nike might reap a few benefits from that?
Yeah. Well, you were mentioning this before we started recording. You were like, yeah, Steph Curry and Under Armour had a good 4 months. Nike came through, wrecked his team, gets KD's team now, and now we've got the Lakers super team budding out there. Yeah.
So I'm now just split. I mean, here's the thing. I love my Spurs theory. I'm not going to let it die. I will be disappointed if it doesn't happen. But if what prevents the Spurs theory from happening is LeBronzo, you know?
We're not calling it that.
We're definitely calling it LeBronzo. And it all comes together because of the Illuminati. I think this is great. This is huge for the NBA.
Yeah. But so you're in agreement that it was not a fluke that LeBron has not made a public statement or really even a public appearance all summer long.
No,
he's been banging
his chest on Instagram. Like, that's been it. Like, he's singing along to rap songs. That's all we get.
And then after 6 weeks of Lakers rumors, his first public appearance is a Lakers game to watch Lonzo. And
it comes the day after the Lakers give a pretty generous one-year contract to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was repped by LeBron's agent, Rich Paul. I think this is just a lot of dots that we need to be looking at here.
Yeah, I mean, and I heard someone in Vegas was like, Pelinka and Magic are doing a good job, and then someone else interjected, nah, Rich Paul runs the Lakers. So, I don't know. I don't know. It was fun to watch last night.
Why can't we call it LeBronzo?
We're not calling it. What was your Nike Illuminati thing?
The Illuminati.
Yeah. Not doing that either. Although LeBron also had his Illuminati recruits, Ben Simmons and DeJounte Murray there. I mean, Ben Simmons' best friend was a little bit of a red flag to me.
I want to describe him?
Yeah, well, I texted a photo to Mike Levin of rights to Ricky Sanchez, and he called him a rejected Hernan Gomez brother. I don't want to – the guy is probably 20 years old, so I don't want to go too far into it. But yeah, so it was interesting. Who knows what it all means, but – something is happening with LeBron. I think last night was more confirmation.
There's no question about it. And I think for Lakers fans, I mean, we came in saying this was going to be their Christmas, right? Like, there's a really good chance that the best part of the 2017-18 season for the Lakers is Summer League.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a legit chance. If it gets better than last night for the Lakers, a win, 36 from Lonzo, tons of LeBron talk,
yeah,
and just a scene.
Well, because there's there's a good chance that this is all sort of like a smokescreen from LeBron.
Oh,
I mean, so this could be like the best 24 hours of like the next couple years with the Lakers, because Lonzo looks like a superstar. It looks like LeBron's going to LA. And everything's great. And who knows whether that'll actually play out on any of those fronts. But
I just think we're winners if these conspiracies, the Lakers and the Spurs, are just dueling all season long, you know? Like, if we can just get this LeBron stuff going, that will cover up for the fact that Cleveland had a terrible summer and they might very well get swept in next year's finals.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be an entertaining year of LeBron theories.
Look, I don't fault LeBron for going out there and looking for his next cast either. If you saw Jordan Bell at Summer League for the Warriors, where he's putting up 5x5s and just blocking every shot, and you realize that now a rookie is going to improve Golden State's front court rotation from last year when they smoked everybody, and they basically now have zero roster holes, I would be thinking exit plan really, really, really aggressively if I was LeBron.
Yeah. And my two final thoughts on this, before we move on to Summer League standouts and dive into the mailbag, I think the one thing that you can definitely say is that LeBron likes being in the spotlight and likes having people sort of chatter about him and speculate. And that was on full display last night. But then the other thing that I really am curious about is, like, how did the Lonzo shoe situation happen? Like, was it Magic saying, look, LeBron's going to be there, wear Nikes, let's make this happen? Was it Magic going to LeVar and saying, chill out, we don't need you in the picture right now? Or was it Lonzo saying, let me be me? Probably was not Lonzo's call, but
it could have been Lonzo saying, these shoes aren't holding up for me, you know, like, I like these shoes, I'll wear them off the court, but if I have to go out there and be judged and my dad's gonna crush me if I don't play well, I want to have the best chance to play well. And I don't know, I didn't seem coincidental that his best game came in real shoes with his dad not there. That's all I'm saying. I thought less LeVar was definitely more for the Lakers.
Yeah. You were hammering that line last night. God, you're the worst. It was a great night. It was a great night. Sorry, we're a little bit punchy. All right, let's move on, though, to the rest of Summer League. So Lindsay asks, Donovan Mitchell, Summer League flash in the pan or possible unicorn and reason for hope? Please discuss. And then we have another one from Ben, who is a longtime listener from Atlanta, and he just wants to know, in general, which players have impressed us most this week? And he also wanted to know if we attended Jaylen Brown's rookie party, which I feel like we both dropped the ball on that one. It was at Topgolf. It sounded like a pretty good time.
Yeah, I didn't go to that, but I heard about it. I could give you secondhand speculation of a party that I didn't go to. I think that's kind of bad radio. Let's talk about Summer League standouts. So what did you think of Donovan Mitchell? Are you in? Is he the savior that the Utah Jazz so desperately need?
Not to name drop, but so before the Lakers-Sixers game, I wound up talking to Sam Hinkie for a couple minutes last night.
Nice.
And he explained Summer League by saying it's like getting the correct answers on the test, or like looking at the answer sheet. And basically, after you study the draft for 3 months, you show up in Vegas and suddenly you can see, like, that guy's great. That guy is not, he does not have it.
Zach Collins is not ready.
Yeah, Zach Collins was the wrong answer. Donovan Mitchell, though, Looks awesome. And that's what that again, like that's what I like about Summer League is you can watch these guys for like 30 minutes and you can see, all right, well that is going to translate. Yeah. And I will say Donovan Mitchell has been so good that I almost have my guard up about overhyping him because you know, over the last few years, there's been Anthony Randolph, Josh Selby put in work like 5 or 6 years ago for the Grizzlies.
Was he a co-MVP?
Yeah.
He shared the co-MVP with Damian Lillard, and I think that's the only time they've been mentioned in the same sentence since.
Every now and then, we have to be careful about overhyping guys, but his athleticism has just been off the charts. He's been handling the ball really well, and defensively, he was always going to be great. So he's the one guy who jumps out as potentially the steal of the draft, and I'm already pissed off at the Nuggets for not taking him. That's my big thing. He would have been the perfect fifth starter for the Nuggets, and now, I mean, I guess they traded him for Tyler Lydon and Trey Lyles, and still makes no sense to me.
Yeah. In terms of other standouts, Dennis Smith Jr. to me was, prior to Lonzo's big breakthrough, I thought he was the most consistently impressive guy. Crazy athleticism, really slippery off the dribble, good at like getting into bigs' bodies and bouncing off, getting to a good shot. Just super athletic, just freaky hops. I never would have guessed he had knee surgery.
Yeah.
And I think that was like one of his red flags, right?
Yeah. No, and he's super bouncy.
Yeah.
And I like just watching him move because he kind of reminds me of early years Baron Davis, who's like, would have been a sensation had he come like 10 years later and YouTube and Vine had been around because he just would like dunk on people twice his size. And that is the vibe I get watching Dennis Smith.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, insatiability. I think I mentioned that earlier with him. I always love to see that. He's way up there. You know, in terms of a second-year guy, Pascal Siakam from Toronto was just sort of high activity. Wow. Like, they're going to have to play in minutes, and I think he showed, like, he can do that. And there's a bunch of second-year guys who didn't really hit, like Thon Maker. I was coming in expecting, like, Thon to just be everywhere, dominate.
Yeah, this was
like,
sort of a reality check for Thon.
Yeah, and maybe some guys just don't take it as seriously, you know? Like, they just kind of go through the motions. He only played a couple games. Pascal was not in going the flow motion. Like, he was ready to go. Which other rookies did you see?
Well, Jordan Bell, we mentioned. Oh, yeah. It's completely unfair that he's on the Warriors. In large part because he's great at a handful of things and that will help most teams, but his weaknesses won't matter in Golden State because he's not a great scorer. And basically, they have guys who are going to be able to sort of compensate for that. Obviously, that's probably one of the best offenses of all time. And so he's going to be able to slide in there and develop slowly. And, it's really upsetting. I was talking to somebody about them making that pick last night, and apparently the Warriors called a bunch of teams in the top of the second round, and everybody was like, absolutely not. And then good old Reinsdorf and the Chicago Bulls, Garpax, they're always up for a couple extra $X million wherever they can find it. And here we are. The Warriors look more set up. Although the thing is, I was also talking up how deep the end of their bench was, and someone was like, "Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's about the three or four stars. And if one of those guys gets hurt or one of those guys leaves in the next few years, then they're screwed regardless. Or not screwed, but they're suddenly vulnerable. And like
they might not win every title.
Yeah, potentially beatable.
Hey, this is one other thing I want to say about Dennis Smith. I did the ask around to like people and say, hey, the red flags that were supposedly around this guy before the draft, like, are you still believing in that? And I got a lot of like, you know, like, no, that's not a thing. We're good. Like, are you watching him play? Like, forget the red flags. You know? And it's funny how quickly those things can melt away when guys, you know, show out. Maybe that's overreaction, maybe not. But that just kind of tells you how good his week was.
It's funny. I think if he hadn't had a knee injury late in high school, people would have been a lot more comfortable taking him in the top two or three picks. But the knee injury coupled with, like, weird scout whispers about the people he hangs out with and all the typical like draft red flags. I think that was enough for teams to get scared off. But you look at the Knicks, it would be so much fun to watch him and Porzingis next year, and they still wouldn't be good. So they could tank plenty effectively.
I go back to the Bulls too, man, because their point guards are just rotten. You know, yeah. I mean, they have like nine of them. None of them can play, and you're going to be sitting there every Bulls game all season long, thinking, "Man, we could be building this ship around."
But
Dennis
Smith. they got Chris Dunn, the point guard of the future. Yeah, they don't need to solve the point guard position.
I don't know which future you're talking about. Other guys that we should discuss. I don't think we've mentioned Josh Jackson. I wouldn't call him necessarily a standout.
Yeah.
I got to say, and this is going to be real on brand for me, I was a little disappointed with Phoenix just kind of all around. Like, they had a lot of young talent. Josh Jackson's shot doesn't look great. I think you had mentioned that coming in, maybe in the pre-draft. Seeing it in person, it's rough. And the other thing that bothers me, not just about his kind of catch-and-shoot jumper, which has a hitch, his shot selection, he goes way too often to these little dinky floaters, and he kind of shoots it like a pea shooter. I mean, no arc on it. There's like, he's going to shoot at like 20% from those shots this season. And they're just wasted possessions. And he is so athletic that, especially in summer league, you want to see more of the rim attacks. And there was a few times where he really threw down some pretty thunderous dunks. But his mid-range ideas just drive me bonkers.
Bad ideas.
And then in terms of their other guys, Marquese Chriss, I got to put him in one of my disappointments category. When you stand next to him or near him, his body is just unbelievable. Like, he looks like he should be an absolute freak. To me, he didn't seem necessarily engaged. Like, he didn't want to dominate like he should as a second-year guy. He seemed kind of too willing to loaf.
Yeah.
Wasn't nearly as active or imposing kind of on the glass as I had hoped. Lots of settling for long twos. Just no business taking those shots. There's no reason, even in summer league, for that to be a part of your game. And it just kind of made me wonder, like, what's Phoenix been doing with him? Or, like, what's he been doing? I just wanted to see more progress. And then Dragon Bender was, you know, at times just invisible.
Yeah, Dragon Bender was rough. He had a couple moments where I was like, man, I don't see it.
Yeah.
And, like, again, it's sort of like stats are sort of irrelevant to summer league for me. But you look for guys who pop, and Dragon Bender did not. He was almost in the Papa Giannis category, where you're like, oh, okay. But I my biggest disappointment with the Summer Suns was no Tyler Ulis. Apparently, he's too good for Summer League. I feel like we're lowering the bar for who gets to just skip Summer League. But yeah, he was out here and didn't play, which was a bummer. The other two guys I would mention, who I actually wrote about today, John Collins. And
I'm glad you mentioned him, yeah.
John Collins and Bam Adebayo. Both of those guys look like steals. I think Bam went 13. John Collins went 17.
No, Bam was 14. Collins was 19.
Okay. It's been a couple weeks. I have not memorized the draft order. After memorizing it for mock drafts, but yeah, both of them look awesome. And John Collins is like defensively kind of a mess right now. But there's enough to work with where, like, he's sort of a more athletic version of the dying low post guys that we've mentioned a bunch of times. And he's also got a nice face-up game, which I think is going to help him. And I also, like, it's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better situation for, like, him to develop than Atlanta, because their coaches are good at adding pieces to guys' games.
Yeah, and you really hope that it snuck up on us. The Hawks are going to be really bad. So you really hope that he just has a real solid role early in the season. Maybe it doesn't happen from day one, but you hope that they just give him a bunch of minutes and let him learn on the job. You know, I think, why not? I mean, what's your alternative?
Should we mention Tatum?
Well,
10 time?
We've been trying to not mention him just to troll the Celtics fans out there. But
he's been great in summer
league. He's been solid.
He's been great. I heard a guy compare him to Rudy Gay, which is not that exciting for Celtics fans, but seems pretty realistic to me.
No, that's good. In about 15 years, he can go to San Antonio and win his first title.
Take a discount. No, but he should be good. And honestly, it'll be really interesting to see how he fits in Boston, because they need a guy who can score. I just wonder how many opportunities he's going to get, you know?
What about Fox?
I've watched him a couple times. This is about what we'd expect from Fox. Yeah. Like, he was faster than everybody. He was great on defense. And we just sort of have to wait and see as far as the jumper is concerned. But
I don't think he didn't disappoint, though. I mean, I think he was solid.
No, he was great.
B plus, A minus.
Yeah, I'm really bummed. Still upset about the no Lonzo Fox rematch on, I guess it was Monday night. Anyways, we should move on, though. Who will be the worst team in the NBA next year?
Well, what are the candidates? I mean, I think automatically you put Brooklyn into this discussion. I think Phoenix has got to be in this discussion after being horrible last year and choosing to shut things down and making no meaningful improvements this summer.
Yeah.
I don't know if Sacramento is quite in this conversation, but they're going to be super duper young. And their vets aren't the kind of guys who are going to really put you over the top. Like, there's nothing wrong with adding the guys added, but that's not really like big-time quality additions.
They're in the show.
Yeah, now you're into it.
It's going to be tough.
It's not corny once you start saying it. I see how it is.
No, it's still horribly corny.
Well, what about the other East teams? I mean, is Chicago in this conversation?
Yeah, I think Chicago's going to be in the mix. I think Atlanta is another team that you mentioned earlier in the week. Like, their roster is going to be really, really rough next year. I mean, they've got a lot of young pieces that I like, but then you look at Dennis Schroeder, he's going to be their best player, which I don't know how that ends. They signed Dwayne Dedmon, who is a decent starting center, but not really going to change anything. So they, I think, are going to be sort of the sleeper team to jump into the lottery mix. And then I'd also say there's a chance that the Sixers season gets kind of ugly. If guys aren't healthy, that could break bad pretty quickly.
The Lakers probably are in this mix too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can't defend all five positions.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a recurring issue for them. And I'm not sure how much they're going to care about wins. I mean, they'll probably take them if they can get them, but sometimes it's just out of your control. And I think they're still so bad defensively in terms of their individual pieces, and some of the younger guys are just not going to be able to guard anybody, that they're probably in that mix. But
okay, so basically we've got Brooklyn, Atlanta, Chicago, LA, Sixers, and the Sixers could honestly be like a six seed in the East, or they could be really tough because the reason I worry about them is because Markelle Fultz is 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons is 20. Neither of them have played a game. And it's just going to take a couple months for them to sort of adjust to managing the game. And more so, they also have to figure out how to play with each other. So it's going to be a little bit more complicated.
Did we not mention the Knicks?
Yo, that the Knicks should be in there.
That was a huge oversight. I don't know if I just like thought we had already mentioned them or not, but I think the Knicks have a real shot at it.
Well, and you know, the two that really deserve a lot of consideration here are the Knicks and the Kings, because the Kings have incentive to tank.
For sure.
So they don't have their pick in 19. So it's going to make sense for them, like, over the final 3 months to really sort of strip it down. And then, yeah, man, I mean, there's a good chance that it's going to be KP and Tim Hardaway Jr. next year running a two-man game, and Porzingis is not quite good enough to pull that off.
Yeah, I think we've now listed like a quarter of the league, and I think that's very telling, because I think there's a lot of teams that could choose this season to run the other direction pretty early, and that's fine. I'm not really prepared to make a call on this yet.
Yeah.
I think it would probably be the funniest if New York or Chicago was the absolute worst. Like, if you saw a situation where Brooklyn finished above the Knicks in the standings, could Steve Mills survive that? I mean, this guy survives everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one where, you know.
Steve Mills is president for life with MSG. And, yeah, I think Chicago, Atlanta, New York, all Eastern Conference teams.
And Atlanta's got motivation to run to the bottom, too. I mean, when you lose that many All-Stars, even if you don't think some of those guys were real All-Stars, over the course of multiple years, the only way to retool from that is to get top lottery talent.
Yeah,
I mean, look how long it took them to assemble the guys like Horford, Josh Smith, like that whole group. That took a long time to like get all those guys together.
That's one of the reasons I liked their summer so much, is that they had a chance to lie to themselves and overpay Paul Millsap and stay in that like 4-6 range in the East. And instead they were like, screw this. We're not going to throw away $100 million.
I've got one more I think we should throw in here.
What?
Pelicans. They could go real south, real hard.
I don't know, man.
Really?
I mean, everybody's trying to keep their job there. Anthony Davis is still Anthony Davis and is going to be good enough to keep them at like 35 wins.
If Boogie gets traded at the deadline, if Rondo goes there and pulls Rondos.
Yes.
if all of their D-League talent plays like D-League talent and they shut Anthony Davis down 20 games before the end of the season because they always do that and they fired their coach and they fired their GM midseason because it went so poorly, isn't that a scenario?
Yeah, I guess so. I just...
They have, I don't see any
I've
way...
I've wanted them to tank for several years, and they haven't been able to put it together, so...
I just wonder if this is one of those fresh-eyes situations. Like, maybe their best-case scenario is it all blowing up so they can bring in a new GM, like, mid-season and try to figure it out. Maybe not. Maybe that's too pessimistic, but I'm pretty nervous for them. Like, I don't see any way they make the playoffs, and I think if you've got guys like Davis and Cousins who are getting their hopes up last year about being relevant, and then they're just, like just out of the playoff... conversation early because the bar is so high to get into that top eight in the show, they realize they're not part of the show. I think that could turn sour really quick.
You're just going to keep the show going all year. All right, next question here. So, we forgot one on Summer League prospects from Boss Gupta. He says, as a dyed-in-the-wool Spurs fan, is it too early for me to be stoked about Bryn Forbes? Did you see any Bryn Forbes?
Well, I saw him in the Western Conference Finals, and I remember looking up what had happened to him the previous year. And this guy was like a platinum member on the Greyhound bus. Like, he was back and forth San Antonio to Austin. Did I already use that line before? Might have. He had a lot of D-League, you know, work put in to get him to that moment. I thought it was really cool that Popovich gave him the opportunity. Obviously, in the Western Conference Finals, that was pretty dicey. Like, that series got away from him. But it was cool to see him in Las Vegas, too.
Yeah, I did not see him, but he became sort of like an urban legend for me. People would be like, can you see the numbers Bryn Forbes is putting up? So I don't know, but I hope he's as good as advertised.
Well, one more reason for LeBron.
Yeah, totally. Well, and DeJounte Murray was next to LeBron last night, and when you think about it, the alternatives, DeJounte Murray is 20 years old in Vegas. He's probably been here for about a week, maybe 10 days now. And the alternatives for him last night would have been pretty boring, depressing. And instead, he got to hang out with LeBron all night. God knows what they did afterwards.
Yeah, he could have gotten pesto gnocchi with me and then come back to the hotel to do some homework.
Yeah,
like me.
Exactly.
Or he could have gone anywhere he wanted in the entire world with LeBron James.
And this is why people sign with Clutch Sports. It was probably the best day of DeJounte Murray's life. But we should move on to actual superstars. Instead of LeBron's Illuminati recruits, Senator Batman asks, so how well do the Thunder need to play next year for Paul George to say? Second round? Because that's possible. Western Conference Finals? Because that seems unlikely. Finals? Because that on that one, they have roughly the same chance I do. What do you think? I mean, he's gone, right?
Is there any answer?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the default setting for this conversation has to be that he's gone. And I talked to a couple of people who are like Oklahoma City and media people, and that seems to be their default setting. Now, I think we should give a lot of credit to Sam Presti for going all out with the welcome party. Did you see the welcome party?
I did see it.
And it was nuts. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, they had hundreds of fans. First of all, they greeted him at the airport. Then they bring him to this whole stage setup. You know, they had the ESPYs going on in L.A. This was like the Paul George ESPYs, you know? Like,
yeah.
He was the only one being honored, and all he had been honored for was getting traded.
Well, it made me a little sad. I saw all the people there, and they had, like, graphics set up.
Oh, it was great.
And I was like, man, this could get kind of dark if everyone thinks he's going to stay. Well, I can't watch those fans live that same timeline again.
Well, here's why I give Presti credit, though. He's going down swinging. Like,
yeah.
He is going to take his shot. And I think maybe part of the problem with the Kevin Durant thing is that because Kevin had given so many indications that he was happy in Oklahoma City over the years, he never really complained. He was always loyal to the coaches, you know, never made a fuss really about anything.
Right.
That could have sort of put Sam into a situation where he thought, okay, as long as we take care of our business, he'll come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not having Russell Westbrook at the Hamptons, you know, not doing some of the recruiting stuff that has become so commonplace these days, maybe put them at a disadvantage. And this seems like a correction. It might be an overcorrection to have a welcome party for a guy who is, you know, threading the needle with Lee Jenkins in terms of what he wants to do with his future in Sports Illustrated, kind of leaving open the idea that, kind of things are on the table. But the scary part for me is just the team-up possibilities next summer are outrageous. And Paul George being in the mix with so many other like A-list stars, all potentially looking at the Lakers as the place they want to land, there's nothing Oklahoma City can do to compete with that. Like, they're not in a situation where they can say, hey, we're going to go out there and add a third or a fourth superstar.
Well, and there's a non-zero chance that Paul George comes to OKC and ends up recruiting Russell Westbrook to go to LA.
Oh, you're going to be that guy.
Well, no, I don't want to be. I don't want to be. These Thunder fans have been through a lot of shit over the past 2 years, and I don't want to, like, twist the knife, but it's at least on the table.
You've got two guys who are battling for the title of best dressed in Oklahoma City who are from Southern California.
Yeah.
That is definitely on the table. It's, I mean, it's maybe not the nicest
it's
thing
not
to say.
Likely. Yeah.
Well, no, I think it's a reasonable situation. I mean, LA is going to have flexibility.
The one place that Paul George could have gone where I don't think the conversation would have gone this way is had he landed in Boston
or Houston.
Yeah, maybe Houston. Well, I mean, Houston like post Chris Paul trade.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think if he went somewhere where he was going to win 60 games, and, I mean, especially Boston being in the East, they might have had a better chance at keeping him. But even had he gone to Houston, like Portland or OKC or Washington, these are all places that were just never going to keep him.
One thing I'd say, though, at least he played along. Like, he said he wanted to go fishing in Oklahoma City. He showed up to the thing.
He did.
He high-fived all the fans at the airport. Like, there were scenarios where Paul George is like, welcome party. Nah, I'm good.
Well,
I'll post for some pictures and I'll move along.
The one quote he had, which I have here from Lee Jenkins, was the thing about Durant where he says, KD was like, that place will blow you away. He told me they can offer what other teams can't in terms of the people and the preparation and the facility, down to the chefs and the meals. He was pretty high on them. He thought it was a first-class organization in every way. Bringing up Durant in your Welcome to OKC interview is a little bit dicey. Like, I thought, I read that, and I imagined the Jonah Hill gif where he's like, cut it out, man. I mean,
yeah, it's like my ex-girlfriend in college cooked the best meatballs. Like,
yeah, nobody wants to hear about Kevin Durant. Kind of a red flag, but we'll see. I'm really excited. And even if Russ doesn't sign the extension, I don't think they're going to get many great offers this year because people are not going to necessarily want to rent Russell Westbrook for 3 months before free agency. So I hope they just go all in with this roster. And then if guys leave next summer, they just start over.
That's
easier for me to say.
That's looking like where it's going. Are you completely convinced Russ won't take the money this summer? I mean, is that done? Because Pressy had
a comment about that.
He sounded mildly optimistic. I think his quote was something along the lines of, it's not a negotiation, basically saying, look, it's on the table if he wants to take it. Seems like a very similar situation to the Wall deal in Washington. I don't think it's crazy that he would just take it. It's so much money. Getting those long-term deals, like I've said before, is hard, even for star players.
Yeah.
You never know, an injury takes you out of that conversation where it could cost you $100 million, even if you still get $120 on your next deal. You know, it's like the numbers are so big. That's why I credit Harden for taking the money. Like that.
Not only that, Westbrook's identity and brand is stronger in Oklahoma City. So there's a good chance that he looks at it and says, look, I want to go down in history as the guy who stayed and the sort of cult hero that has become like one of the biggest celebrities in the world because of this.
Okie Dirk.
Okie Dirk without a title. I don't see it ending with a title for Russ and OKC, and that might be what swings it. But speaking of contract extensions, I'd say we've gotten multiple questions on John Wall's extension for the last like 3 or 4 weeks. Darren says, one of the most underreported things this offseason is John Wall not taking the designated player extension offered by the Wiz. As this heads towards the NBA's next Paul George situation, what should the Wizards do? One, move Wall now with 2 years left on his deal. Maybe flip him for young pieces from Denver and Phoenix and begin the rebuild before his trade value sinks to Jimmy Butler, Paul George levels.
So like a Darren Williams type thing.
Yes. The second option would be send Bradley Beal to New Orleans for Boogie. Get off a max guy with an injury history who Wall doesn't love playing with in exchange for Wall's college running mate. Three, stand pat, let Wall leave in 2 years. Basketball underrates just being a pretty good team. So, I don't know, man. From what I've heard, basically, like, Bill Simmons, who's my guy, has been driving the John Wall conspiracy bandwagon for, like, the last 2 weeks. From what I've heard, though, he's basically waiting until next summer to do anything. Because if he makes another All-NBA team, he can make an additional $50 million on an extension. And Wall, it sounds like, wants to bet on himself. That some of that comes from team sources, so I mean, read into that what you may. Like, they may be more confident than they should be, but I'm not that worried about Wall, in part because if Wall left, I would be able to just say, all right, this was a fun era of caring way too much about the Wizards. Let me move on and be an adult with my life.
So look, this is going to be a public service announcement to our listeners. Andrew is the canary in the coal mine here. If there's going to be any drama around John Wall leaving Washington, not taking the money, like serious situations where their franchise could be wrecked, Andrew's panic will show through first. We will know he is the warning signal. He is the smoke detector in this situation. I'm sitting right next to him right now. He looks very calm. He's not worried about John Wall. So that means Wizards fans out there and other observers, it's not yet time to panic about Wall.
Well, it's also just, it's who he is. He's the type of guy who would bet on himself.
And he's the type of guy who would take every possible dollar he could get, and he would love the idea. If he could get the record extension number, like that headline, you know, the James Harden headline?
Yeah.
I think John Wall would love that.
Well, that's the other thing, is I'm not too worried. If they can offer him an extra $50 million next summer or even the following summer, I think he's going to take it. But if the Wizards turn into a mess and the next year or two they kind of flame out, I would want him to leave because I like John Wall and I want other people to appreciate him. So I would be all for it if things don't work out in D.C. if he left. I don't know what more there is to say about Wall. I think
it's just too early. I think that's, yeah, it's part of it. It's just a little too early for him.
Oh, one other thing. I have this quote here from Candace Buckner.
Fantastic.
So Wall, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, we read it on the podcast, came out with a Paul George trade demand. And now,
request.
Yeah. Trade request. Basically,
you have to trade for Paul George.
A cry for help. And there were some people who said it sort of seemed like he was taking a shot at Otto Porter in the quote. And then there were a bunch of Wizards fans online who were like, no, what are you guys talking about? He wasn't taking a shot at Otto Porter. And then Wall circles back this week and says, there's a difference between a role player and a superstar. It's a big difference. There's a lot of teams that will make a lot of trades for a superstar. It's what people are going to say about it. I love Otto as a teammate, but at the end of the day, if you can make your team better, you always do that. If people take it the wrong way, then so be it.
There's no wrong way to take that, dude. You're trading your teammate publicly. Like that is, there's only one way to take that. To me, I actually kind of have a problem with that. I'm a big John Wall guy. Everybody knows that. You gotta hold that back, especially when he just signs the deal. Like, and that's sort of like the headline of their summer, right? If you're the franchise guy, I think you have to do a little bit better than that.
It was kind of great, though. He was like, let me circle back. There was some gray area about whether I was taking a shot at Otto. Yeah. Yes. The reason I like that quote is because John Wall is sort of incapable of being dishonest with the media.
Too honest for his own good.
He really keeps it real at every turn. And,
I love it because normally these situations, guys retract, right? He's extending.
He's doubling down, making sure everyone knows what we're talking about.
It's like, Otto can't do anything except for stand in the corner and shoot. He's not Paul George. It's going to be John Wall in 2 weeks.
All right, next question from David. He says, thinking about the state of NBA fandom, I can't help but think of soccer fans when this subject comes up. Look at teams like Everton and Stoke City in the EPL, or Iceland and Wales in the Euro. They go into each season knowing they're not going to win the title, but they show up and scream their hearts out and get so much joy from each win their team provides. Are they providing a blueprint we should all be looking to for the NBA? And he mentions a great article by my guy Chris Ryan at The Ringer, just sort of talking about this weird state that a bunch of teams around the league are in, whether it's Portland, whether it's Washington, Toronto, where you kind of know there's a ceiling and you end up appreciating the moments, the smaller moments along the way. And I think that's a really smart way to look at it. And I've been thinking about the soccer parallels a lot. Granted, I don't know much about soccer. So I'll be talking to people and be like, yeah, like it's a lot like European soccer. Not that I like know the details of how their off seasons go. But basically, I just think that there's going to end up being a lot of turnover in the modern NBA, and it's going to make it more interesting for people. And that is ultimately a good thing for the NBA. And sort of what David was alluding to and what Chris's Ringer piece was alluding to is that we're going to learn to be fans in different ways and sort of find different things to get obsessive about rather than just whether your team can win a title.
Yeah, it's been a natural thing all summer long to avoid the "this doesn't make them better than Golden State."
Yeah,
because that's true about every single move. If you wanted to downgrade every move that everybody made, including a very good Houston team adding a guy like Chris Paul, through the prism of "you're not better than the best team because the best team is one of the greatest teams we've ever seen assembled," that is a natural habit that I've definitely developed, like looking through that win or bust mentality. But I think that we have had enough big names move that, you know, the adjustment might be, like, I feel like when I first was writing or even when I was growing up as a kid, you didn't change your team allegiance, right?
Yeah.
I think we're seeing more and more people just pick players that they root for, and if those players move, then they just roll with that, you know? Like, if John Wall left the Wizards to team up with the Lakers in 2 years, would you then become a Lakers fan?
I would not.
Okay.
I would feel pretty gross about
But don't
that.
You think some people would?
Although I was a Lakers fan last night and have been through most of my time at Summer League. I'm ready for them to return to glory.
I guess what I'm saying is, if you weren't a Wizards fan initially and you just came up and you liked John Wall because you were following him on Instagram and Twitter because you're 16
yeah,
years
oh,
old
yeah.
right now and he goes to the Lakers, maybe that you look at that move in a totally different view
Whoa.
Than everybody did, you know, when LeBron left Cleveland the first time.
And that's why the game is healthy right now, is
yeah.
I think most people, well, I wouldn't say the game is in the healthiest place right now, but I think that most people are fans of basketball and less kind of ride or die with their one team. And there are a couple markets where it's a little differently. It works a little differently, but we all kind of just sort of watch all 30 teams, and everybody has a take on the Warriors and the Cavs and LeBron, and I think that's a healthier place than trying to balance it out so that all 30 markets have an equal shot at winning.
Yeah, I just say follow the stars, cheer for the stars, you know, pick guys that you relate to, don't worry about the teams. Some teams are so poorly managed in the NBA, they're never going to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 10 teams that we say, not only now, but 5 years in the future, do they have any shot at being better than the Warriors or the Spurs? I would say no. And if you went back 5 years, a lot of those same teams would be those same bad teams, right? So I think we just need to be honest about that. And, you know.
One more thought on the turnover side of this is, like, you look at the offseason, all my favorite deals are 1 and 2 year deals. And I wonder whether teams are going to sort of decide amongst themselves that this is how we should be doing our business, because
collusion.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm advocating for collusion necessarily, but you look at guys. I mean, like, the Redick deal is so much better for 1 and 23 than 4 for 71 with Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I mean, if the cap is going to be this onerous, then teams are going to have to come up with different approaches than they typically have shown. And I don't know. I think
the teams are really struggling at this point because the stars are figuring out that they can control everything if they take the shorter deals, right?
Yeah.
I think the stars have now evolved into, like, the second wave of doing that, where it's not just LeBron who's passing up the money.
That may be the danger, and that may be why teams don't want to do it, because then you're basically opening the door for three super teams.
Yeah, and I think the stars are so reactive and so intelligent and so shrewd that's where this is going. I mean,
yeah.
Next summer, we can bank on another super team. And remember last year, what was I preaching about? Stranded stars. I mean, that's going by the wayside because these guys are taking control themselves, and the smart teams are putting themselves into position to be able to accommodate that, to recruit like crazy, and to kind of turn this into, you know, an AAU free-for-all.
All right, next question from Barack. Our MVP here, he says, one of the most common platitudes used in NBA writing, especially around the draft, is the statement that so-and-so would be unstoppable if he could even be league average from three. It got me thinking, who are the if-he-could-shoot all-stars? He has Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green, Giannis Antetokounmpo, DeMar DeRozan, and Ricky Rubio. I would add, like, 80% of the people currently in NBA Summer League. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that's a pretty good list.
No, his list is good. I think we should throw in Westbrook. I mean, can you imagine if Westbrook could shoot 40% on threes? Like, yeah. His game would be absurd. I think Giannis is the obvious answer, and I'm still in on Giannis coming back with a shot. I know you're trying not to let yourself get your hopes up, but I think Giannis is coming back.
I would also slide Ben Simmons in at the four,
okay,
because Draymond can shoot. Draymond is a good enough shooter to be a threat, and that's what people are talking about as far as if he could get a jumper thing.
Yeah, he was rough last year, but he's had some pretty good three-point shooting seasons. I think, to me, a guy who needs to have one's Blake.
Blake would be unbelievable if he could shoot threes.
And another great one that you just can't overlook is Kidd Gilchrist, Michael Kidd Gilchrist.
Wait, he's sort of the platonic ideal of the if he could shoot. Who else would we say? De'Aaron Fox is the rookie of the year in this category.
I think Robertson's another, like, you have to mention him. If he could really shoot it, he'd be amazing. Some other guys, you know, energy fours, like in the Kenneth Faried mold, like, he's useless. Like, he doesn't even get mentioned. Like, we were talking about the Nuggets logjam. We didn't even mention him.
Yeah.
We, like, mentioned, like, 16 other guys, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's there too.
He's another guy who would be a 10-time All-Star if he could hit a jumper.
And I would also say Elfrid Payton. He would be a completely different player. And I think the Magic's entire worldview would be completely different if he was just, like, a knockdown off the dribble three-point shooter.
Yeah. I almost wrote an article about this back in the fall, and I might write another one this fall, but I think all time the best if he could shoot all-star would be Allen Iverson.
Okay.
Because his jumper was always kind of janky, and like if he had been consistent from outside, he would have been the best scorer of all time.
For sure. Other youngsters in that similar kind of Blake Griffin type mold, Aaron Gordon, Julius Randle. Like, okay, those guys.
You also have Nikola Mirotic. I don't know what page you're on, but he's a shooter who can't shoot. But if he could shoot, he'd be pretty great.
For sure. Young Derrick Rose would be right up there with AI, too.
That's true.
He would have been a monster.
All right. Vyas Gupta asks, have you guys ever thought about inviting a current player onto the show? I think it'd be fun and interesting to see players' insight regarding big moves during the off season and summer league news.
They got better things to do.
Well, and it's also hard. The reason we don't do that, there are a couple reasons. First, because we're on opposite coasts most of the time. Second, because it's hard to find players who feel comfortable enough to just be honest and, like, fire off opinions for 45 minutes. And I don't know. I'd like to do it with a couple veterans. The vets are always the best ones.
Yeah, I just like talking to Andrew. I mean, I'm not going to...
Well, Haynes was a lot of fun.
No, was unbelievable. We should thank Haynes. And everyone who gave us feedback, actually, on that Chris Haynes interview in terms of, you know, behind the scenes of the Gordon Hayward, we really appreciated that feedback. It was great having him on, allowing him to kind of tell his side of the story. And we'll probably have some more of those kinds of interviews. But I don't know. Maybe it's a personal preference. Like, if you're not in the right situation, sometimes interview pods drag, man.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, and it's easy to get into cliches, and it's really hard to pull people out of cliches. So I think that's one of the reasons why we don't go to that well that often.
Yeah. But having said that, we're going to try to do more next year. It'll be fun. Eric says, as someone just getting into basketball, what are some things I should take the time to consume during the summer that will make me love or even understand the NBA even more? My recommendation would be, for beach reading, any of the books that Sports Illustrated's Jack McCollum has written are great. He has one from the 80s on the late 80s Celtics, or I guess it was like 1991. But basically, the Bird and McHale Celtics. And then he has a book on the Dream Team that was fantastic. And these are all books that, like, I read in maybe 2.5 days. And then his book on the Suns was a lot of fun as well, the Steve Nash, Amari Suns. So someone a couple weeks ago had asked about NBA books I'd recommend. There's obviously, like, David Halberstam.
Yeah, let's start with the classics. I mean, David Halberstam's Breaks to the Game, must read, not just from the Blazers' perspective. It's about the Blazers, but it's about life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. I mean, it's a big book. It's a Halberstam book. Jordan Rules,
I just ordered Jordan Rules.
Gotta have that in the library. I would also say, check out, like, Rare Air. There's a Michael Jordan book, Photos from the 90s, that will kind of get you a feel for what it was like back in that day. I'd also say the Free Darko book is really fun because you can see where so much of sports writing and kind of takes that are out there right now started from with awesome art.
Yeah, it's a good coffee table book.
Yeah, so maybe what we should do is just compile a list of, like, the must-read basketball books and post that somewhere. I've got a decent number collected over the years, and I would be glad to do that.
Yeah, and also, you just go back and listen to 200 podcasts from me and Ben over the last year or two.
Yeah, and actually read our articles too, guys.
Next question. We got two more questions. One, Sean, I've been listening to Sharp since back in the NBA After Dark days at Grantland. Back then, he was the voice of reason on the podcast. When I heard he was at SI and had another podcast, I had to give it a listen. Imagine how surprised I was when Sharp is now the conspiracy theorist who only seems mildly interested in actual basketball. It reminds me of LaMarcus Aldridge joining the Spurs. He seemed great in Portland, and everyone was sure he would take over for Duncan, but as soon as he got around a real NBA winner, he immediately looked out of place. Yes, in this scenario, Ben is Popovich and Andrew is LaMarcus.
Jesus.
Is this too much pandering? Is this too savage of a hate mail?
Very savage.
And what other NBA scenarios would you liken your podcast performances to?
Oh my God. Look, I thought it was bad when Yago said I was having sex with my drone, but I think being called the LaMarcus Aldridge of podcasters is worse.
Unquestionably the meanest thing anyone has ever said to me. This is what happens when you told the people that I like the hate mail. That took it too far. Over the line. Don't ever call me LaMarcus Aldridge again. I don't know. I'm reeling. Having read that a second time, I'm sort of at a loss here. I would say
he dropped you.
I would say that I'm kind of the James Harden of this podcast. Okay. I'm not always completely engaged, but I'm pretty efficient. And yeah, a little bit inconsistent, but I've got a high ceiling. And you're sort of more the Russell Westbrook,
don't
at 100 miles an hour every time. Yeah, man. I don't know.
I do shoot some shots with some of my corniness.
Yeah.
I will say that.
That's true.
I might not finish at the rim very well.
It's been a great 9 months, so thank you to everyone for listening. And one more from Senator Batman. He says, Golliver, I flew my friend's drone in the Columbia Gorge last weekend and loved it. Do you have any recommendations for a starter drone under $300?
Oof. I don't. Usually the price point on the drones about $500.
Okay.
So you can sometimes, like, DJI is the main drone company. They're not paying me, unfortunately.
it's only a matter of time, man.
But they have, like, an outlet store, so you can get discounts in the outlet store. You could try that route. But, you know, we did go to Hoover Dam today.
Yeah.
You just got to see a little look at my drone. It's tiny. It's compact. It's portable.
I was shocked by how small it was.
And it's around $500. I mean, I guess what I would say to Senator Batman is just save up a few more paychecks and just make the investment. It's a brand new drone. It's called a DJI Spark. It will last you for years if you get it. The only thing is, remember when you're buying a drone, guys, you're going to need the accessories too. So that's going to add a little cost because the battery life is a little short. If you really want to go on some big humdingers of aerial
drone
photography,
excursion.
You're going to need some extra bats.
Okay? I like how he threw in Columbia Gorge, and you knew exactly what he was talking
about.
Of
course. Well, I'm a real Pacific Northwesterner, not a fake one like yourself, and I know exactly where that is. It's beautiful, and I'm sure that'd be a great place to drone for sure.
Well, and we had a great little field trip this morning.
Yeah, what did you think about it? I mean, you saw it in action. You saw me catch it out of the air. That was pretty cool, right?
Open floor on the open road. I was all about it. The drone Honestly, I wasn't going to take shots at you while we were out there, but I would not be a good droner because I was bored after about 30 seconds, whereas you were kind of hypnotized. Ben, when we were out there, said nothing like the squeak of sneakers on the hardwood or the hum of a drone in the outdoors.
I did say that.
The Hoover Dam was great, though. That was really, really impressive. And
Should I share my dark take about the Hoover Dam, though?
Yes.
It's like all these engineers from around the world bringing their families to like gawk at the amazing American experience, and they're doing that. You know, you see people from Germany, Australia, I mean, all over the world, people are coming here to see this dam, this gigantic masterpiece of American engineering. And then at the same time, our political climate is where it is. And they've just got to be thinking, like, these people are just going to waste. This is the downfall of American society, right?
Yeah, from like the end of World War II to the middle of the 80s, we had a great run with innovation. But that's not a great note to end the summer on. A little bit dark. But yeah, it was a great day. Ben forced me to take a dorky touristy photo.
Oh, so good. I got Andrew
straddling the state line.
I got Andrew with his left leg in Arizona and his right leg in Nevada. We had to bump some young teenage girls out of the way so we could take that shot. But, you know, look for that on his Instagram, hopefully, if we're lucky.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, thank you to everyone for listening. It's been a great season. I'm going to be going on vacation for a few weeks. Ben is going to hold it down, and then we'll be back to a regular. We're going to do once a week and then twice a week again in September.
Yeah, I've got an interesting appeal for you guys. Send me all the questions, as always, openfloormail@gmail.com. If you have guests or other writers, whether it's SI or otherwise, you want to hear us or hear me interview, hear us talk back and forth about basketball over the next month or so, send me your ideas. I'd love to hear them. And we'll try to make that happen. Until then, Andrew, enjoy your vacation. I will miss you. Don't be afraid to buy your own drone. I just gave some great recommendations on this podcast.
The sweet hum of a drone in the August summer nights.
I'm sure your wife would like nothing more than a romantic drone photography getaway. But guys, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening so much all year long, and we will keep it going here this summer. I'm not going to let you down. We'll get something in your earballs soon enough.
Yeah, well, Ben's got to go work on his all summer league team. So look forward to that at some point. All right, take it easy.
Peace. Whoa.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.